This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, hello there. You've found yourself at the start of the very first episode of I'm a Writer But, a podcast that focuses on the work, writing, and personal lives of its subjects. Because what we make is such an essential part of who we are as writers, we're going to start each episode with some writing. And because this episode is sort of an intro to me, Lindsay, and my co-host Alex, you're going to be hearing a bit of our writing to kick off the episode. And even better, it's brand new work. Hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter.
And I'm a writer. But...
They are everywhere, and thus you stop seeing them until you become one of them. Then you see that they are everywhere, and you are one of them. Sturdy calves, or sturdy forearms, or sturdy harnessed breasts, hair up in a ponytail, or half ponytail, or floppy bun, or pinned excruciatingly back with zigzagging bobby pins, feet clad in shoes both comfortable and easy to put on, eyes asquint and knuckles white on strollers or fisted over tiny or sticky hands, teeth bared the way mothers have done for generations, for millennia, their ancestors charging across the plain or the desert or up the mountain, herding children to safety from mammoths or warring tribes or the honking Buick, nodding and encouraging and saying, gentle, gentle, and holding a scream in their throats until it grows into them, becomes a part of their voice, so that when they speak, their children hear it, their partners hear it, the cashier holding out the streamer of coupons hears it, that scream that these mothers are not allowed to unleash, for it would terrify and paralyze, and everyone who listens is left with the impression that these mothers have tamped something down, something inherent and crucial and primal. And there is nodding and sighing and eye rolling at how sad these women's lives are, how trapped. And it is true that these women are not free. They can't dart into the department store to try on a halter top. They can't shoplift idiotic dangly earrings on a whim. They cannot have loud sex with their partners in the shower. They cannot leave their shrieking children on the floor of the tampon aisle. They are held to the earth, rooted where they stand, fixed in place by the children they hold in the never-ending groceries and the taunting laundry and the mantra of what is for dinner? Dinner is what? What is for dinner? And the fear that they are doing all of it wrong and that someone is watching them fail. And yet they sheathe the very thing that could cut the world to shreds, hearts in their throats. They could spit blood, but they do not. Rarely they do. See them, get closer, crossing the street, pushing a stroller and holding a toddler by the hand, one shoulder hunched up to the ear to hear every third word from the smeared phone mashed to their faces, the smudgy canvas slip-on shoes and the flowy skirt and the old t-shirt and the few elements of personhood. The bright red hoop earrings or the dusting of bronzer on the locket that the baby will yank until the clasp breaks and it will tumble unnoticed into the clay dust of the softball field where the toddler is digging for treasure. Notice these things. They are choices and they were made by these mothers. Cave drawings, tally marks, graffiti, signal flares. I was here. I am here. In fact, they could shoplift the thing, fuck their partner wherever they please. They could leave the children. They could strike the children. They could starve the children or ignore the children. They could be their own mothers whose syrupy love embarrassed them, or whose attention held fisted as a wooden spoon had the sharp stink of disgust, or whose eyes never touched down upon them, were always searching out windows or over shoulders, or whose teeth feathered with lipstick dandruff on her sweater, or whose neglect was a tightly held secret or else. They could reach back and back and grab whatever will be held by them. And because they could do these things, they already have done these things. How are you? Someone will ask. Oh, the answer will begin. The mother may stare off. She may immediately become distracted. Her little one is trying to climb a tree. Her little one is stomping a pile of red ants. She may laugh. She may answer, fine, you. Or she may tell you the truth. And this is where mothers get a bad rap. Because do you really want to know how she is? Do you? Maybe it isn't that mothers are perceived to have no inner lives. Maybe it's that they have them, but they are no longer private. Mothers have no boundaries, and how embarrassing. See that one. Her child is pulling her shirt down and slapping her breasts. See that one. Her child is at the top of the climby thing and she is not making a move to help him. See that one, openly flirting with that hot dad. This one, choking back tears, forever spilling over. Mothers may as well run naked and weeping through a football game and call it a day. There is no privacy, and in exchange there is loneliness, as bright and relentless as the sun. Their mothers tried to warn them with their distance or their rage or their secrets. Whose fault was that, they wonder, stirring something, wiping something. They squint, they mutter, how did it happen? They laugh, they sigh.
Ben received a small severance package. He had worked in the office for 4 years, and for those 4 years would receive 2 months' pay. He was fired on an idyllic Friday morning in June in the city of Chicago. Ben's back faced the shining lake as he sat in his boss's office and learned details of the separation. He knew as he was being fired that he would not tell his wife. He would not tell Tara. He would avoid telling Tara for as long as was possible. He would lie, then continue to lie and deceive to perpetuate his original lie of not telling her that he had lost his job. He did not want to lie to her, but the alternative, honesty, did not occur to him. Too damaging. He did not want to disappoint her, fill her with more doubt, cause her to worry more about him than she already was. Not that he was afraid of Tara, not particularly, not any more than was reasonable, not any more than any man is afraid of his wife. Ben's hope was to find another job, another solution, and present that to Tara as good news, a surprise, obscuring the deception and however long it had lasted. But he was not afraid of her. There were disagreements, sure, but those were due to being human, dropped like rag dolls into the churn of dailiness, rerouted and scuttled by eddies unseen, often much less than that. TV, impatience, a hot room, an awful childhood face remembered. Ben could rarely recall what led to their disagreements and was bested in any argument, ultimately resembling a neutral spectator in a dazed late afternoon crowd, leaning against the counter in their kitchen, defeated but present. Ben was not universally dim. He could quip about passerby. He wasn't fixed in his thinking on most topics, but he did have a submerged quality, like his disposition was formed by being taken under daily by a surging river and grasping towards the surface, deadpan. Fuck this again. It wasn't exactly that dramatic. Momentum from elsewhere always seemed to guide him. This seemed true of his consciousness, his interest in any conversation, his pursuits, his attitudes, his ability to love. Of course, this was a choice. It was easier for Ben to claim everything was beyond him because he had accomplished, to his thinking, nothing. An embarrassed man you might like, might not. Embarrassed because he knew he could not actually carry out the schemes of his own devising, whether it be a lie, any lie, an attempt to change, an attempt to win. The persistence of Ben's belief in himself was flickering, forgetful. It was easy, though, to live embarrassed and allow yourself to be misunderstood by those who don't really know you as humble, patient, wise, content.
Jesus Christ.
Give me a break.
That was wonderful. I remember reading that and being as blown away as I am now.
It's fun to hear readings. I honestly have not even been able to make so many of these Zoom readings, even though they're like so
I know
everywhere, just because, you know, work or whatever. So it's fun just to sit here and hear you read.
It is really fun. I really miss that. And I am someone who has really whittled down my leaving the house to almost nothing,
totally,
even before the pandemic. But that was one of the things that when we first went into lockdown, I felt really terrified about, like, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to go out to readings. What?
I know. Yeah, it's crazy.
I kind of ran to my Instagram Live and was like, I'm going to read on Instagram Live.
I remember. I totally remember. And then there's like kind of a terrifying moment where you join and you're like, oh God, yeah, she's right here with me. It's like, but yeah.
I know. And classic my technology life, it crashed midway through. So I just kept reading. I had no idea. And then I looked up and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
But no, it's really fun. It's really great to hear just, you know, number one, that other people are, you know, out there making stuff despite and because of what we're going through.
Right.
But I guess we should introduce ourselves.
Sure.
I'm Lindsay Hunter and I'm a writer, but I guess I should say I'm a writer and I have three children, and a dog. And, you know, I often, when I am introducing myself to new friends, new acquaintances, I say, I stay home with the kids. And then I spend the whole rest of the conversation thinking of how I can work in that I actually also write, you know, in a real way. And feeling, you know, like it's such a struggle to get that in, because the amount of work that I'm able to do on a daily basis is, you know, not as much as what I would in my younger years have considered a quote real writer to have been getting done. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm Alex Higley. I am a writer and a father, a dad, two little girls and a dog as well, although a much smaller dog than Lindsay's. I never say that I'm a writer when I meet people. And similar to what you're saying, I feel like because then it becomes a conversation about, it's almost like immediately like a justification thing, like where it's like, you do have to kind of, it's like, well, what did you read lately? And then you try and find common ground on that as a way into talking about what your writing is or what it means to you, to mm-hmm. me, to write. And mm-hmm. it's so hard to find common ground with so many people. When you're surprised, it's the best thing. When it is someone who's a reader and mm-hmm. in a reader of maybe similar stuff or stuff at least that I can have lie and talk about, it's amazing. But when there's no common ground, it's kind of defeating, I feel like. So mm-hmm. I try not to mention it. I just say I work at a grocery store and try and go to the other corner or something. So mm-hmm.
I used to, I think especially around the time that I was pregnant with my third, which was a surprise. And after I had her, it felt like something I really needed to hold on to, even though nothing, you know, I didn't have time to write. I had no time at all to write. So I remember being super desperate to work it into conversations. I wanted people to know that I had this other side of me, because I think I was coming into the conversations assuming, oh, you hear that I stay home with my kids, so you have this certain idea of me. And I think that's part of why I wanted to read what I read today, because, you know, I think it is a common thing for people to think about parents, you know, we're smug or we're, you know, small-minded or we're obsessed with our families and that's it. Or, you know, like we don't pursue these intellectual endeavors because we're, you know, wiping applesauce out of the cracks of our toes or whatever, you know, like, so I, you know, I wanted people to know, like, I'm a professional.
Right.
I'm a professional.
I'm a mother, but yeah. And I feel like it's probably so much harder on moms than dads, because I think a lot of times that question becomes gendered right away. And it's mm-hmm. like, I mean, I can usually get away with saying, you know, just saying what my job is, and they can maybe see that there's not a lot much more. I mean, that, you know, I enjoy it, but whatever, it's my job and mm-hmm. we can move on and I can kind of hide behind that. But mm-hmm. if you're saying you're watching your kids, I feel like there's a whole nother level of assumed judgment, maybe mm-hmm. as well as potentially real judgment that you're having to deal with, that I certainly don't think I have to deal with the same level. But yeah.
Yeah, I think I come to any sort of conversation. This is a problem I should work out in therapy, I think. Is I come to any conversation already trying to assume what people are thinking so I can circumvent that somehow. And I end up blurting things out that, you know,
no, totally.
That have nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Right. It's like, why, where's that weird energy coming from that you just gave me like so heavily?
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry. In my head all day.
Yeah. Yep. I know. I think that's how writers are, you know, mm-hmm. like, the scene is set and I want to execute it the way I think people are expecting me to do it.
Totally.
And, you know, no, the one of the most common things I think people think is, especially when a woman says I'm a writer, they think, okay, blogger. Mommy blogger.
Oh my God. I wouldn't have even thought of that, which shows a lot, I guess.
Which I mean, you know, I read mom blogs and
totally.
Would love to be a mommy blogger. But I, you know, there was one example of what you're talking about, Alex. My neighbors, when they moved in across the street, I immediately worked into the conversation. I'm a writer. You know, I was like 9 months pregnant with my third at the time. And she asked me, you know, like, what do you write? And I told her, and my latest book had been in the Book of the Month Club.
Yeah.
And she had just read it.
Oh my God.
She was like, what? That's you?
That's crazy.
And that's like the highlight of, you know, my life, I would say, aside from my children.
Of course. did she pull out anything that was like surprise? How did she like progress in that conversation, or was it like so shocking that it was just like, what? I mean,
well, I come to conversations assuming that people who have read my stuff are disappointed in it. So I guess I thought, oh man, you know, like that was kind of a brave choice for Book of the Month Club to choose.
You said that?
Well, in my head, that's what I believe.
Oh, okay.
And then, you know, like I followed them on Instagram and I saw what people were saying and, you know, usually people are not that nice online and, people were saying bad things about it. So I thought, oh my God, you know, oh no, she also hated it, but she, you know, I kind of broached the subject with, oh, you know, it was an interesting pick for them. And she was like, you know, Book of the Month Club, every once in a while, they make the edgy choice. And that's the kind of books I like. So
love that you're standing there pregnant and she's having to reconcile eat only when you're hungry with this pregnant woman in the street. That's the best. I love that so much. Oh my God. Yeah, no, but it's hard to navigate how like what that identity or persona or like performance even means on a day-to-day basis, because I think I perform it like in my house. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. okay, here's my time with my computer while we're also watching TV and I have headphones on and I'm going to get 20 minutes of work done onto this and it's three sentences or whatever. But
yeah,
like even showing the other people in the house, like, okay, here I am. This is it. I think, I don't know. It adds up.
Yeah. That's the thing. It took me a long time to understand that I had to take myself seriously because I have this very, real self-conscious feeling that I don't make any money taking care of my children. So I have to, it's in my mind, it's wrong of me to take away any time or put anything on my husband just so I can go off and write or go off and do this. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time to understand, and maybe that's just like becoming an adult in general. I was thinking tonight, I was a child until I had children, you know, mm-hmm. I think that extends to understanding that once that happens or once any major thing in your life happens and your time gets, you know, winnowed down to a precious hour or something, that you start taking that really seriously or you don't, you know, like it's mm-hmm. a choice you have to make. And lots of people make the other choice that, you know, right. it's just not that important to me. And I tried that on for sure. Mm-hmm. Thinking like, why am I fighting so hard for this?
When did you try that on?
I think when I got pregnant with my third, it was a real mind fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And I apologize because Alex and I agreed not to too much profanity.
And when you were reading, I literally thought, don't say my real reaction if we were in. I literally thought, okay, beep, yeah, censor.
And there's some foul language in what I read as well. so I apologize. We will do better. But I just thought, maybe your destiny is this instead, you know, like if you have to fight this hard, it's like, I think writing in general is something you have to continually talk yourself into or remind yourself why it's so important. And for me that changes over time. So like when I was first starting out, it was, well, I really enjoy this and I think I'm kind of good at it. And I just want to see, you know, and I couldn't even like name what my ultimate dream would be. I just thought like, I'm going to take this seriously. And so I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to go to night classes and then MFA. And then after that, after I graduated MFA, it was another conversation I had to have with myself. Cause I saw some of my classmates going into the workforce and just kind of, you know, like not pursuing what we had been studying, you know, at grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to decide again, like, no, this is something that I really want to keep doing. So I'm going to keep doing it. And whatever that looked like at the time, you know, like trying to get published in smaller journals and reading out. And then once parenthood came along, you know, it fundamentally changes everything. And I fought against that. I fought against, you know, people asked me in interviews, like, oh, how has motherhood changed you? Or has motherhood changed you? Or is it changed? And I just was like, no, how dare you ask me that? That's a gendered question. Do you ask that of fathers, you know? And no, it hasn't, you know, like I'm still me. And I am, I think, you know, I think what I write would still be considered dark or gross or something, unrefined. so that's still there, but it absolutely changes you. It changes you from your toes up, you know, like that's the second toe reference in this
podcast.
Let's
keep going with it. Let's go for four.
Let's see how many more I could go. You try to work it in too.
I already have one going.
Okay. Anyway, but it's something that I've had to, cause it breaks your heart over and over and over again, you know, and it's, but without it, I think I think part of me dies and I'm not
a
good mom.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like I can't think if I'm not working on something because it's tied up into what makes me happy on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, my day job is so disconnected from writing, that it's super easy for me to go to work, punch the clock and, you know, then at the end of the day, just come home and it feels like everything is super cordoned off and compartmentalized in my life. And I think a lot of people, I know a lot of people feel that way. You and I have talked about it and I think, yeah, like you said, kind of finding that thing that allows you to get it done in any way, whatever that means, and for it to have meaning to you separate from a goal, separate from publishing or having anybody read it is super difficult when you're, yeah, also worried about the food on the ground that is just thrown or, you know, like being like able to be a spouse at the same time, because that time when you're, you know, when the kids are in bed or when you're home from work and the kids are in bed, it's like, okay, clock's just starting or clock's been running since you woke up. But, finding that kind of thing that's going to keep you working on it. Definitely. And it ebbs and flows. I mean, the thing that the opening page of the thing that I read tonight, like I was always writing short stories. And there was such like a high to like, okay, you know, even if 50 people read this online, it's like, it's so fun to like, just put one out into the world or whatever, no matter how small the journal. And then when you work on something longer for a while, it's so hard to, I feel like that has been a lot harder as a parent. It's the longest thing I've done, but at the same time, it's like, oh my God, I still have to be alive to this thing to make it work. And that can be kind of deadening at times.
It is. And it does, you know, like, I sometimes cringe thinking about all the time I used to have that I wasted. You know, I wasted so much time.
But most people wouldn't look at what you put out before you had kids and like quickies and think the same thing. I mean, I know what you're saying, but if you look at those books, if you look at, I mean, Daddy's was before kids. What else was before kids?
Don't Kiss Me.
Mm-hmm.
These are just shameless plugs at this point, but my
first... Yeah, let's just name them all. We had one called Toes.
That's my next one.
Right.
My first two books were collections of stories, Daddies and Don't Kiss Me. I wrote those before I had kids. Ugly Girls, I wrote partly while I was pregnant with my first and partly after he was born.
Because it's dedicated to your first son, right? I remember that. Or is that, what's the first book? I remember the dedication, whatever the first one after... crushing me because it's like everything is all of this will be for you or every I'm trying to think what the word
I think
was.
In Eat Only When You're Hungry my acknowledgments I said I live to make you and your little brother proud.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Because I had two kids at that point, and then now that I am a mother of three, I've written 2.5 books, but they have not as yet been purchased by anyone. I forgot what my point was there. I was talking about time.
Right.
But I think once you decide again and again, you know, like this is important to me, like you're saying, and I have these very real sections of my life that also require my full focus, like a different kind of focus, but you know, like things you can't really mail in, then you realize I'm going to give that same focus to this major part. And it really is for me. My mom always wrote and still does.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. She wrote like a children's novel when I was a kid about spiders that I still think about.
Oh my God.
She wrote poetry. She wrote a memoir. She retired and wrote a novel. And what? So that meant the world to me growing up. And I always wanted my kids to know, yes, I'm your mother and you're everything to me, but your mother also is this person. And that was just major for me about my mother.
What did it look like? Like, would she be in the living room with you? Would she go upstairs? Like how did it actually work on a,
you know,
she was doing it?
I think she did it when we were napping or asleep or something. But she would, I remember her reading it to us, and she had these typewritten pages. I can feel them, like that, that thin paper that you know, she used a typewriter, and it was called Spider Song, was that novel that about spiders. And I thought it was brilliant. I mean, it's stayed with me to this day, the feeling that it gave me, that, you know, like eerie, fairy tale feeling. But I don't, you know, like she, like I remember seeing her sew. I remember seeing her like always crafting, always cooking, baking, just a very like creative person. But she had this other, it just showed me this, like this other side of her that to me was crucial, you know, was, just like made her almost into like a four-dimensional human. And I want my children, not only do I want them to know that about me, but I want them to have my words one day, you know, like I, not in a cocky, pompous way, but just to sort of get to know me, you know, because that's how, you know, I mean, that was precious to me with my mom and still is, you know, so.
Yeah, no, that's, when was the last time you read that, when you read, I mean, was it when you were a girl or have you?
I asked her to send it to me and she couldn't find it. I know. She just did a major move. So maybe I'll ask her if she found it when she was packing, but I know.
Man.
Yeah. So amazing. But you touched on something that I thought it was very interesting and important, because I did work. I did have a job,
of course,
up until I had my second child. And then I had the opportunity to stay home.
Right.
I thought I would hate, but I actually really love.
Oh, you thought you would hate it?
Oh yeah. Oh, I was terrified. I would literally ask strangers, like, what do you think I should do?
That makes sense to me. Yeah.
Should I stay home? Should I go back to work? Because I had been working since I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Staying home felt like terrifying to me. But I did work all through writing my first four books. First four books. And I remember when I was in grad school, people wanting to become teachers become professors. And I very much did not want that. And I remember one of my professors saying to me, if you want to write, don't teach.
Mm-hmm. I heard that too.
It would be all consuming. You wouldn't have time for your own work. And I just wasn't that interested in it. I wanted a job like you're saying. I wanted a job that I could go to and I could leave there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep, absolutely. But my whole thing was, you know, I heard the same thing from professors, like, you know, just how much time is going to be spent with other people's work that you're going to teach well, you're going to have to consider, you know, you're going to have to bring your everything to it and, you know, really show up for these students. And that's going to suck a lot of your writing brain and energy. But at the same time, I was like, well, you're doing it. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? My thing was, it's like one of those things, like you're in the club and you're telling me this, but it's like, I want to be in the club. Like, what are you talking about? Like, and then, yeah, I thought I wanted to teach. I mean, that was the whole thing why I got an MFA. I was like, I want to teach. Cause so many of my favorite writers, you know, had taught and ended up in some like Midwestern college or whatever. And I was like, that sounds great. But then I didn't think about like, how you actually, if you want to have a family, how you could support a family as an adjunct, be willing to move around, you know, job to job until you maybe have the opportunity at some kind of tenure track pipe dream or something. Like, it seemed like the people who were able to do it were so few, and I didn't really see a path to do it and have health insurance quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing what I'm still doing 7-8 years later, just a manager at a grocery store, but I do think that there maybe is truth to, if you want to write, divorce yourself from it in some of your day thinking, because
I know plenty of people who teach and write and have great careers,
of course,
but for me, I remember getting advice at one point that I needed to be on the same schedule as Ben, who's now my husband. Back then he was my boyfriend. Cause I was working at a bookstore and I would work, you know, till midnight or whatever. And he was a teacher. So it was basically like, we never saw each other. And that was like the best advice I ever got.
Really?
in terms of getting, it just meant so much that we were in sync in that way. Like, we went to work at the same time. We came home at the same time. Because like, while this, all this other stuff starts like getting chaotic in your life, you still have like this base routine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it scared me, the things that you're mentioning, the idea that, you know, that you could work so hard and nothing would be guaranteed. And you know, you just kind of, it's feast or famine, I think, you know?
Right.
And I had the opportunity to work somewhere where I was writing, not in a, you know, not writing fiction, but writing in a creative way.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, and I was in the same, you know, schedule as my now husband. So it just, you know, it made sense. Now I get the opportunity every once in a while to teach workshops online. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Totally.
And I feel so lucky to get to do that. But you know, I wanted something that, like, this is my job and now that's, I've left for the day and now I'm, you know, going to write or I'm going to whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now the job that I have, mother, stay at home mother, you don't get to do that. You don't. My day starts at 6 a.m. when my kids bust in and say, can we go downstairs and watch SpongeBob?
The answer is yes.
Absolutely. And it ends, you know, when they finally go to sleep at 7:30, 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird way, I remember reading, someone asked Ann Tyler, who's one of my favorite authors, do you feel like you weren't able to do as much as you could have if you had not been a mother? You know, there's, I feel like that argument comes up every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, writers, and I think it's a real thing that, that we all struggle with, that, we, you know, especially during this pandemic.
Absolutely.
And she said, that might be true, but it wouldn't have been as, she said something like her writing wouldn't have been as layered or deep or sweet, or I can't remember what word she used, but it was that motherhood sort of gave her this other glimpse into this like other layer of life that she found really helpful and useful as she was writing. And, you know, I feel like there's a million caveats because some of my favorite writers and never have children. So totally. It's like, I'm not saying, none of us are saying you need to have children in order to be a writer, but I
of course
do,
not. Yeah.
As I said earlier, it made me feel like I was a child until I had a child. Mm-hmm. It really, because I think that I was immature. I was shallow and you have to sort of surrender yourself as a parent over and over and over again and widen and widen and widen your boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think for me that has made, that's made that like weird, is the word liminal? I want to use the word liminal.
Yeah,
that, absolutely. That feeling that you're in the present, but you're also in your past and in your future, which is sort of like this aching nostalgia, but for maybe even something that you don't know. Mm-hmm. That only intensified that for me. And that feeling is the thing I chase when I write. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and in addition to the fact that parenthood, you know, it's a giver of emotion, I would say. And that's both on the good side of things and the bad side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. No, as you're talking, and you mentioned Ann Tyler and what she said, I thought of, this is, I'm paraphrasing now, but I remember there's that Alice Munro thing where she was, I think she was writing basically during naps early on. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you think about who Alice Munro is and you read those stories and like the fact that she was getting that done early on while the kids were sleeping is like, I have to swear, but that's the best fucking thing in the world. Like that, like, what is better than that? That she was able to write the stories that she wrote and raise kids and start like that. I mean, that's, I don't know that I'm going to have to fact check after this, but I feel like I read that somewhere where she was like, that's why she didn't write novels early on was because she's like, well, I didn't have time because, you know, Junior's going to wake up. But
I can remember putting my middle child, this was last year. Now he doesn't take a nap anymore.
Brutal. Oh my God.
Oh God. Why? But I remember putting him down for naps last year as I was writing the book that I read from and telling him, you have to go to sleep because mommy has to do her writing. And just being very upfront about it. I have work to do. Mm-hmm. And I tell them that, you know, and I really do treat it like work that I have to do, even though nobody, you know, is, there's no deadline for me right now. There's nothing. I treat it like an absolute must because it is.
It is.
You know, if I'm not working on something, it's like you said, it's just part of me that isn't active, and that's no way to live. You know, it's,
absolutely.
And it is like the moment in my life where it's, where I can, really surprise myself, you know, still surprise myself. So
I'd be interested to hear like, okay, so today we're recording on a Sunday. Did you get writing done today? And if so, like what, how did you fit it in today or not? Or like, you know, on a, like a typical day, what does it actually look like when you're getting it done?
Yeah. I love talking about this and I love hearing about other people's. So I want to hear yours after this, but, no, I didn't get any work done today. Weekends are crazy busy and you would think that they would be, like days of rest, but they're not because, nobody has school, you know, and like I said, two of my three don't nap. So, you know, we're just like filling the day as much as we can. We're going outside. We're, you know, whatever. On the rare occasions that like one of them falls asleep, I'll break my laptop out and try to get some work done. Mm-hmm. But my schedule right now is different than it was pre-pandemic, when I had a child in school all day, another child, both my other children would nap. So I would write during nap time. I wrote the novel I just read from, I wrote during nap times. Mm-hmm. Now the time that I have is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. My middle child has preschool and I take him to preschool and it's 2.5 hours. And I sit in the parking lot outside of his preschool and I write in my car. Because my youngest is napping and my oldest is in virtual school. And I feel really grateful for that time. I feel, I feel very dedicated and clever and excited for that time.
Hell yeah.
But I also can step away from it and think like, oh man, like, ouch. But yeah. I don't know. I'm getting work done. That's all that matters. It's painstaking though. Like my usual word count goal for writing would be 1,000 words every day.
Oh, you think of it in those terms?
Yeah, I do. Cause that's how I feel like I'm meeting a goal, right? Like, mm-hmm. And if I go over 1,000, fine, if I, whatever, but mm-hmm. now I can really only do 500 words mm-hmm. and it's 500 words every other day. And so it's mm-hmm. just like painstakingly slow. And then I got really sick. I did not have COVID, but I was sick. And then some other stuff happened. So I wasn't able to write for a few weeks, maybe even a month. And it's just taking forever. Mm-hmm. What about you?
So it's, my work schedule is kind of strange in that my start of my work week, I'm working late. And then it kind of, as my week progresses, I work super early in the morning. And then my Friday, which is tomorrow, Monday, I work a split shift. Because since the pandemic started, our youngest is 4 months old as of a day or two ago, and my oldest is 2.5. So they're tiny, tiny, and we didn't feel comfortable putting them in daycare. And so my wife and I, Britt and I, it's you know, like a lot of people are doing, it's basically just a handoff. When she's worked from home, and so when I'm home, obviously the girls are with me, and her work schedule was able to, her job was compliant enough where they could kind of move up her hours a little bit or shift them back to kind of make our two work schedules fit like a jigsaw. Mm-hmm. And so tomorrow, I start work at, I work 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. I'll come home, I'll watch the girls all day, and then I go back to work at 6 and I work 6 to 10. And so I will come home, I will take a shower, and I will write for a half an hour. And I have never been a word count person. I haven't been like a watch the clock person. I just will do it until I'm distracted or not interested or it's not working. And usually that's probably about a half an hour on a night like that. And then on my weekend, which is Tuesday and Wednesday, I'm still with the girls obviously, but when they go to bed, our oldest goes to bed. I almost don't want to say it out loud because it's so early that it's like a blessing. So I'm not going to say it out loud.
But
when she goes to bed, and hopefully she stays in bed, which isn't always the case, I'll write for an hour, hour and a half after dinner. And I will leave usually we're kind of downstairs watching TV with our youngest. I will go upstairs and sit in the bedroom and write for an hour, hour and a half. And so probably over the course of a week, I'm writing only 4 or 5 hours,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But when I get an hour or an hour and a half, I can get so much done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it wasn't that way before I was a parent. I always was like someone who was getting stuff done, to what I consider getting stuff done. But since kids, it's just like, if you want to do it, you don't have a choice. It's just charge forward. Let's go. An hour and a half, or like you were saying, like a 2.5 hour chunk is like, okay, that's awesome. That's a lot to work with.
It's like, I can fill that time, man.
Oh, totally.
You know, yeah. Like I can do it. Like, mm-hmm. and before I had kids, I, you know, like I would say yes to everything. Mm-hmm. So then I would have to do work. Or I would just,
what do you mean by that?
Well, that was advice I got from another professor in order to sort of build your community out of grad school. Mm-hmm. You just were supposed to say yes to your friends, like your friend putting on a reading or your friend putting on a show or your friend asking for something for some journal. You were just supposed to say yes. And so I did, I that's how I, you know, like sort of started out of grad school. But then I just continued that because that was a way that I knew I was going to keep generating new work. Because mm-hmm. if someone asked me for a story, I told myself it had to be new every single mm-hmm. time. And so like, I didn't do a reading unless it was a new story, and I was doing multiple readings a week. So I was like getting work done because mm-hmm. I was terrified that if I didn't put those, that pressure on me, that I wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm terrified that I'm a lazy person. So mm-hmm. I fight mm-hmm. against that as much as possible.
This is going to sound terrible, but I know that I'm not lazy. And I'm sure you know that you're not lazy, but I am terrified of people thinking I'm lazy.
Yeah.
I actually, it's like way more, I don't know. I feel like any parent who's even half engaged and also, you know, whatever, has anything else going on, you're not lazy. But for some reason, if someone was to say that to me, it would crush me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I when I wake up in the morning and the boys go watch SpongeBob and I make their breakfast, I make my dog her breakfast, I make mm-hmm. the coffee, I make my own breakfast, and then I sit and I read and drink my coffee, and it's wonderful. But then at the end of every day, I feel guilty about it.
Mm.
And I think it's that. It's, you know, like I should have been doing something else. I could use that time for something else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those moments are where you can grab them are essential, because otherwise you're just a machine, you know, mm-hmm. like you just work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. And I love hearing you say any of this out loud. It helps me so much just to hear another parent say some of that stuff. And I mean, I think that's kind of why you and I wanted to do this, really. It's just like, you don't hear a lot of people, or actually I take that back. I saw a hell of a lot of tweets that are about this, and I would be like screenshotting them and texting them to you on your Twitter hiatus. But you know, there were so many I would send you and be like, look, these people are like, feel exactly the same way when we're talking about this stuff. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's so helpful to see a different kind of struggle. It's because it's going to be struggle no matter which way you try and do this. But I don't know. I think a lot of people are trying to struggle in the same way we are, but it can be nice just to hear that that's the case.
Yeah. I think, you know, it feels like you're in a vacuum, right? It feels like mm-hmm. you're not doing it right, or you should be doing it right another way, or mm-hmm. what you're doing doesn't matter. But it does, you know, and like, as long as you're doing it, then you're not doing it wrong, you know?
Right. Totally.
Is that the end?
I don't know.
That's our show for today. We are excited to talk to a bunch of writers, buttheads is what we've been calling them.
Buttheads, absolutely.
Remember I said that I was a child until I had children? Now I'm an adult who talks about butts a lot, because if you're 7 3/4, butts are the best. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. We're excited to talk more about this. And just want to send a special thank you to my mother-in-law, Sue Brockett, Dr. Sue Brockett, because she bought Alex and I microphones so that you could hear our beautiful dulcet tones in
thank
a professional
you.
Manner. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Sue. And also just thank you to Max Loop for our music. We love it. Thanks, Max.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.